Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the war story right after this. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we've been taught from the time we're children that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if your carpenter said, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Well, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or his own steps is incompetent? My common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Now listen to James Nielsen. Nielsen is a professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he said. He said, it's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And he said, it's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, that it is a cruel hoax. That's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there off your computer. That's georgegordon.org. Hey, gather around, boys and girls. I'm going to tell you a story. I was watching PBS last night, and they had a little segment on there dedicated to the Afghan War, and they called it the Rules of Engagement. So they brought a guy in from the Wall Street Journal, a reporter that had been embedded with the troops over there, to report on what are the rules of engagements for America's soldiers and Marines. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Now, I'm not an expert in war and military operations per se, but as I listened to this guy, I said, my God, can that be true? Have we taken total leave of our senses? Well, listen to this. Let's suppose that our Marines are over here fighting, and there's a house over here, and in the house there's somebody shooting at these Marines. Now, if the Marines can't see who it is that they're shooting at, and if they haven't got a clear target in the window, you know, or out in the front yard or something, can't shoot back. Can't shoot back because there might be innocent civilians in the house that they might hit and hurt. And I thought, well, I'll be darned. you're getting shot at from this house, but you can't shoot back. If there's a guy out here and you can see that he's got a gun, you can't shoot him unless he shoots at you first. Now, if he shoots at you, you can shoot back. Now, if in the process of shooting back at this guy, he throws his gun down and runs away, you can't shoot him after that because now he's not a threat to you. I thought, well, I'll be darned. I didn't know that. Now, back in the Korean War, we had a war. It was a no-win war. It started out like we're going to have a win war here, see? So the North Koreans attacked the South Koreans. And in the first week of the war, they drove the South Koreans down to a little tip at the end of Korea. And about that time, General MacArthur got over there, and some Americans got there. And they held on, and then as time progressed along, they drove the North Koreans back up past the 38th parallel, and then they kept pushing them back until they just about had the war won. Well, then the Chinese came into the war and drove our guys clear back down south of the parallel again and damn near threw them off the peninsula. And so General MacArthur, he launched an invasion behind their lines, and he drove them back, and he was just about to win the war again. And the civilian establishment here in the United States tied one arm behind his back and crippled up the other one so that he couldn't pursue the war to a final conclusive victory. And it's been that way ever since. We did that in Vietnam, and we've been fighting these wars here. You know, it's not a case where we want to fight this war and we want to win it. We've got these rules we got to follow. This guy Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, they had him on the news last night too, and he was up there talking to the Afghan parliament. And let's see what he said here. He said, here it is, right here, number 5. He said, Karzai will not rest until there are no civilian casualties in this war. And I thought about that, and I said, what? You mean we're going to prosecute this war and not a single Afghani civilian is going to get hurt? And I thought, well, that's quite a little trick. Now, I remember back in World War II, President Roosevelt said that we were going to prosecute an ethical war, that we were not going to use gas, and we were not going to bomb civilian populations, that we were going to just go after the military, we're going to go after their military installations, and so on. And pretty soon, the Germans, when they launched this fire raid, they tried to burn London down. They used incendiaries. And that kind of opened the door to this thing of bringing the civilian populations into the war when the Germans tried that firebomb thing there on London. And so the Americans, as the war went on, finally got to the point where in February of 1945, they bombed Dresden. And I don't remember how many people they killed, 100, 200,000, something like that, in this firestorm in this city. And then they did these fire raids on Tokyo. I mean, they intended to burn this thing to the ground if they could. So the war extended itself to these civilians in the population. So the concept of civilians getting killed and getting hurt in war, you know, has been going on for quite a long time. Now, there was a time when we used to divorce war as much as possible from cities. You know, we'd get out here in the field someplace, you know, and we'd kill each other out there in the field. The red coats and the blue coats would get to fighting, you know, and they'd kill each other out there. And then the civilians would come out and get up on the mountaintops and the hillsides around there and watch it. Kind of like a spectator sport, you know. But war has gotten to be kind of out of hand now, and so it's best if you get as far away from them as you can get. So I just thought I'd report that on the war story here in Afghanistan. The soldiers, they've been asking the soldiers over there what they think of these new rules of engagement, and they're complaining. And they're saying that, hey, listen, you're tying one hand behind our backs here. And it reminded me, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion, that I'm sitting over here in my house doing my own thing, and I get a call from my neighbor, Bob. And Bob's really excited. He says, I got two thugs over here in my house. And then they're tearing things up over here, and they're just raising hell, and I can't get rid of them because I got a broken leg. Would you come over and help me? And so I go over to Bob's, and sure enough, there's these two thugs here in his front room. And so I grab a hold of one of these thugs over here, and I throw him to the ground. But in the process, I knock over a table, and one of Bob's lamps gets broken on the floor. And Bob yells out, George, George, stop, stop. We've got to have rules of engagement here. And I say, well, what do you got in mind here, Bob? He says, well, okay, now listen, here's the way we got it. I want to throw these thugs out, but I don't want any damage done here in my house. And you're just, you know, you're over here causing a lot of damage. So I want you to fight with these guys and subdue them and throw them out. But if you get close to a table and there's a possibility that you might knock over the table and break one of my lamps, I want you to break off the engagement. Same thing if you might knock a painting off the wall, or you might get some blood flowing here and get some blood on my carpet. What would you think, you know, if I called you and I said, hey, Tom, come on over here and help me throw these thugs out. But I say to you, now, you can't get any blood on the carpet, can't knock over any tables, can't break any lamps or knock down any pictures. What would you say about that? Now, I thought when I was watching the news last night, I thought I was watching cartoons. I thought maybe I was watching The Simpsons, or maybe I was watching, you know, Porky Pig or Sesame Street or something. No, these were serious people. I mean, these people had suits and ties on. They were wearing uniforms. They weren't kidding. They're just telling you matter-of-factly, you know, this is the way the game has to be played. Kind of got to thinking about that, and I said, you know, in the Bible, there's quite a bit said about war. In fact, there's a number of laws in the Bible that came from our Creator. See, years ago, we Americans and Britons and most of you NATO people, you know, are Israelites. You know, you people from Germany and France, you sent troops over there to Afghanistan. You know, you're Israelite people. And years ago, when our people were all out there at Mount Sinai with Moses and coming into the Promised Land, there were some rules of engagement that were laid down by God Almighty Himself. I'm not kidding you. I'm telling you this story because I'm going to read to you here the rules of engagement that God Almighty imposed upon Moses and Joshua in the conquest of the Promised Land. And these laws, these statutes, these commandments that He gave us, you know, some 3,000 years ago, are still in full force and effect today. And I said, geez, I wonder what would happen if we went over to Iraq and Afghanistan or Korea and we just enforced, we just put into practice these rules of engagement that were laid down by God Almighty, the Creator. Well, I don't know. Let me read you the story here. I think you'll be amazed. Here are the rules of engagement that came down from God to Moses. You'll find it if you want to read along with me. You go to Deuteronomy chapter 20. Deuteronomy chapter 20. And it's the first 20 verses. It's Deuteronomy 20 verses 1 through 20. And here's the story. Here are the rules of engagement. It says, and when you go out to battle against your enemies, and you see horses and chariots, and you see a people that are more than you, be not afraid of them. For the Eternal your God is with you, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And it shall be, when you are come nigh unto the battle, that the priest shall approach and speak unto the people. And the priest shall say unto them, Hear, O Israel, you approach this day unto battle against your enemies. Let not your hearts faint, and fear not, and do not tremble, and neither be you terrified because of them. Because the Eternal your God is He that goes with you. to fight for you against your enemies, to save you. And the officers shall then speak unto the people, saying, What man is there that has built a new house and has not dedicated it? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the battle and another man dedicate it. And what man is he that has planted a vineyard and has not eaten of it? Let him also go and return unto his house, lest he die in the battle and another man eat of it. And what man is there of you that has betrothed a wife and has not taken her? Let him go and return unto his house, lest he die in the battle and another man take her. And the officers shall speak further unto the people, and they shall say unto them, What man is there that is fearful and faint-hearted? Let him go and return unto his house, lest his brethren's heart faint as well as his own heart. And it shall be, when the officers have made an end of speaking unto the people, that they shall make captains of the armies to lead the people. Let's pause right here and think about this for a minute. Who are the people who are qualified to go to war? Well, you know, constantly, you know, when they are interviewing troops and they'll, or the wives of the people that are over there, or the mothers and fathers of the people who are about to be deployed, they're always talking about, oh, he's so young. Oh, he's got a wife and she's pregnant. Or he's got this business that he started, but you know, now he's been taken away and he was doing this, that, and another thing, and they've uprooted him, and now he's got to go to war. Well, here's what the logic behind this is, if you'll stop and think about it. A guy that's got a wife at home, you know, and is, and she's pregnant, his mind is on his wife, not going out here and fighting people. And if a guy's got business interests at home, his mind is on his business interests. It's not out here on killing Taliban. And so if you'll take a look here, you know, if you've got a new house, you've taken a new wife, you've planted a vineyard, you're newly married, or you're fearful or faint-hearted. I mean, you got a bunch of these guys over here that are fearful and faint-hearted. These guys they got a name for this. Now, I used to call it battle fatigue. And I don't know, they come up with all of these scientific terms and one thing and another. What it really boils down to is the guy is fearful and faint-hearted. He's kind of scared. And you can't have people like that out there fighting. I mean, I would not make a very good soldier because, you know, I'm chicken. And you don't want people like me out there on the battlefield, you know, chicken and hiding and one thing and another. You got to have, warriors are a special class of people. I mean, these guys, you know, it's like the guard bees in a beehive, you know. They got a mission, and their job is to sacrifice themselves if need be. And by God, they're going out here and kill that mouse before he gets into the beehive. Now, God, the Creator, now, you know, he takes a look. Not everybody can be a warrior. Not everybody here is fit for military service. And so he's got a little standard here. No, it's nothing big, but you know, if you've got wives at home and you've got family and business interests and one thing and another, and you're young or you're fearful and faint-hearted, you ought to just be, you know, just about to be upfront about it and back out and say, hey, listen, this probably isn't my cup of tea. All right, now, once we've gotten rid of all the fearful and faint-hearted and the guys over here that have their minds on wives and business interests in one thing and another, it says, when you come nigh unto a city to fight against it, then proclaim peace unto it. You know, you walk up and you say, hey, listen, we're from the United States of America. We're from Germany. We're from France. We're from the NATO alliance, and we're nice guys, and we're here to bring peace. And we want all of you people here in the city to live and prosper, and we don't want any bloodshed, and we don't want any hard feelings. So we're here, you know, as a peace force, and we want all you people in the city to surrender. We want you to come out single file, bring your guns with you if you so desire, and put them over here on the pile, and, you know, line up over here, and we're going to take numbers and kick ass. Now, that's the first step. You come up to the city. Now, I remember over here in Iraq, there was a city over there. I think it was called Fallujah. And the Marines were told to go in here and take the city or do whatever it is that the Marines were supposed to do. So they surrounded the city. And I don't remember them offering the city peace. There were refugees that had left, and there were a bunch of people that holed up in the city. And they had this big fight. And this fight got on, and they were fighting away over here. And then one day, some political deal was made, and they quit fighting, and they withdrew, you know. And they gave up, and they quit. Now, I'm going to show you here that God, the Creator over here, He doesn't fight like that. That's not the way that He would conduct a battle against Fallujah. I think you're going to be amazed here when you see the story. And when it's all said and done, now again, I want to point out, I'm not a soldier and I'm not a military man. I'm not here to tell you how to conduct your wars. I just thought I would offer an alternative that came from our God, our Creator. He told us how to fight these wars. We used to do it this way. There was a time, you know, when wars were conducted like this, but we haven't done this for a long time. So He says, you go up there and you offer these people peace, and it shall be, if that city answers of peace and opens unto you, then it shall be that all the people that is found therein shall be tributaries to you, and they shall serve you. And if it will make no peace with you, but shall make war against thee, then you shall besiege that city. And when the Eternal your God has delivered that city into your hands, you shall smite every male thereof with the edge of the sword. But the women and the little ones and the cattle and all that is in the city, even all the spoil thereof, shall you take unto yourself. And you shall eat the spoil of your enemies, which the Lord your God has given thee. Thus shall you do unto all of the cities which are very far off from thee. And I thought about that, and I said, you know, that Afghanistan is just about as far off from us as we can get. They're exactly on the other side of the world. And this is what you shall do to all of the cities. Now, we're not conducting these wars over here now the way we were instructed to carry out these wars, and I was kind of wondering if maybe that's why we've got so many problems. We Americans don't follow the instructions of our God very well. We haven't for about, 100 years now. It's been about 100 years since we were really serious about obeying God and keeping His commandments. And it looks like every day that I read my newspapers and watch the TV over here, they're getting further and further away from them. Now, he goes on to say, thus shall you do unto all the cities which are very far off from you, which are not of the cities of these nations, but of the cities of these people, which the Eternal your God does give you for an inheritance. You shall save alive nothing that breathes. Woo! Did you hear that? If that sucker's breathing, kill it. So, he instructed the Israelites. Now, this is back in the days of Moses. This is Moses writing this. Moses is the secretary here. And he says, now, when you take these cities close at hand, you know, this is like the Americans doing or going to war against the Indians here in North America. Now, listen, you Indians here in North America, you're very fortunate people that we did not follow the instructions of our God, because if we did, there wouldn't be any Indians in North America. No Indians in Canada. Not a one. There'd be no Eskimos. There'd be no Indians. Well, I say no, you know. There might have been a few that escaped and hid away someplace. But the rule was, the instruction was, you shall save nothing that breathes, but you shall utterly destroy them, namely the Hittites, Amorites, Canaanites, Pyrites, Hivites, and Jebusites, as the Eternal your God commanded you, that they teach you not to do after all their abominations, which they have done unto their gods. So should you sin against the Eternal your God. Now, when you shall besiege a city a long time, in making war against it, to take it, you shall not destroy the trees thereof by forcing an axe against them, for you mayest eat of them, and you shall not cut them down, for the tree of the field is man's life, to employ them in the siege. Only the trees which you know, that they be not trees for meat, thou shalt destroy and cut them down. And you shall build bulwarks against that city that makes war with you until it be subdued. So here's a little added little piece that goes to it. He says, now if there's trees, and you know, I guess that would include things like corn and wheat and food crops and so on. He says, you know, this scorched earth policy over here isn't good. And you can use that stuff, so make sure that you take it and use it. Don't destroy it. So there's quite a little story there. That's called the war story. That's Deuteronomy 20, verses 1 through 20, where God said, you go over here and you offer peace, and if they don't accept it. Now, let's apply that in real life. Let's suppose that the Marines surround Fallujah, and they say, now listen, all you guys in there, you need to put down your arms and come on out here and let's all be buddies. And we'll go down and have a beer and eat some pretzels and have a good time. But if they don't listen to you, and they didn't listen, I mean, they put up a hell of a tussle there. If we had followed the advice of our Creator, then we would have made war against that city. And we would have destroyed it. Isn't that just special? We would have destroyed the city. And we would have killed every male in the city. Man, boy, child, and baby. Now let me show you what happened over here. This is recorded in Numbers chapter 31, verses 1 through 54. This is a story about the war with Midian, the Midianites. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, he says, avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites, and afterwards you shall be gathered unto your people. So he went to Moses, and he says, now, I got one last job for you, Moses. Here's the last job of your tenure of office. You've served me faithfully now for 40 years, and we've had some good times and some bad, and now we're down to the end of the tenure here. We're going to have a change of the guard here shortly. But I want you to conduct one last official act for me. We're going to go to war against Midian, and we're going to finish those guys off. And he said, Moses spoke unto the people, saying, you arm some of yourselves unto the war, and then let them go up against the Midianites and avenge the Eternal of Midian. Of every tribe, 1,000 throughout all the tribes of Israel shall you send to the war. Now, this policy that we're following here today, we have a standing army. We Americans have, I think it's 2.5 million people under arms in the service, and we have them stationed around the world in 137 countries, and we have 700 and some odd military bases. We have American soldiers in 65% of the countries of the world. There's 209 countries, and we got 137 countries that we got people, serving in or stationed there. This is a world-ruling military empire. It's bigger than anything the Romans ever envisioned. Here we are trying to be the policemen of the world, and we're fighting our wars over here in Afghanistan and Iraq, but we're not fighting these wars the way our Creator told us to. And that's why I thought, well, let me tell this war story over here and see how did God conduct wars in the past. And so this war with Midian is an example. Now remember Jesus. Remember sweet Jesus? Well, one day he was talking to his disciples, and he said, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And he said, all of these things happen to these people as examples for us to learn from. And so here's some words that came out of Jesus' mouth over here. This is Jesus, you know, before he became Jesus. This is the Creator God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you know. And he told Moses, he says, now listen, this is the way you conduct war. This is the way we do it. So there were delivered out of the thousands of Israel, 1,000 of every tribe, 12,000 armed for war. And so instead of a standing army, what we had here was a militia. This is why in our Constitution we have this provision for a militia in the Second Amendment, a citizen army, so that when there's a time to go to war, when we need to go to war, the president would call on the governors and say, okay, we need 1,000 men from every one of the states of the Union. You people in New York, send us 1,000. You people in California, send us 1,000. We're going to raise a 50,000-man army. Now, I know somebody's going to say, yeah, but Rhode Island's a lot smaller than New York. No. Wait a minute. Hang on a second here. Let's read this story again. There were some tribes that were bigger than other tribes. The smallest tribe over here was the Levites, and the biggest tribe was from Judah. It was the Judites. And you'll notice here that Moses spake unto the people. He said, arm some of yourselves to go to war and let them go up against the Midianites. Of every tribe, 1,000. Well, that's not fair and it's disproportionate. Well, that's probably true. God has not always been fair. I'm not here to apologize for him. He's unfair. He expects you people in Rhode Island to put up just as many soldiers as the people in California. How do I know that? That's what he just gave us an example right here. In the war with Midian, he said, we're going to take 1,000. Now, 1,000 isn't a hell of a lot of people. He's not sitting here saying we need 2, 3, 5, 10, 15, 20 million people to go over here and fight this war. We need this number of people. Might be 2,000 from each tribe, might be 3,000 from each tribe, might be 500. We did a war one time with only 300. 300. Old Gideon, you know, was the general, and he went out there and he raised up 300, all of them left-handed. they were left-handed guys. I don't know why God came up to that conclusion, but he did. He's kind of funny that way. So Moses sent them off to the war, 1,000 of every tribe, them and Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, to the war. Now here's another little thing here. He always sends a priest, and the priest goes out on the battlefield first. No. And the priest over here is the guy that says to the troops over here, don't be afraid now. We're about to go to war here in Fallujah. Just gather around. Now we've got a battle plan, and we've got a rule of engagement. Comes from Moses, came from God Almighty, and we're going to employ that battle plan. We're going to employ those rules of engagement against the city. And then the rest of us can sit back and relax, because this is the way God wants it done. Yeah, I got to pause here for a second and remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind now that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, these beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear in this program, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions now of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, and we're talking about the war story here. The story that we get here from the scripture is something different than we see from what's actually being carried out. I told you I was watching the PBS NewsHour last night. And I could not believe the rules of engagement being imposed upon our soldiers in making this war against the Taliban over there. I was just dumbfounded. I can understand why the soldiers over there are complaining that they've got one hand tied behind their backs. Now the Taliban, they can set off booby traps and mines on the roads and shoot at people from houses And we've got rules that we got to follow here in order to prosecute this war. So I can readily understand why the soldiers aren't too happy with these rules of engagement. And then the guy they were interviewed said, "Well, did you talk to General Petraeus?" "Yep, I went in and I talked to General Petraeus and told him about the dissatisfaction with the troops and asked him how this was. And he said, this is the policy that we're going to follow, and that's the policy. It's correct, and that's the policy we're going to follow." And I thought, well, that's not the policy that God Almighty followed. That's not the policy that Moses followed. That's not the policy that Joshua followed. And it's certainly not the policy that Jesus instructed us to follow. So I just thought I'd tell the war story and let's see what would happen if we followed God's instructions here concerning war. So we got Phinehas here and Eleazar the priest to the war and the holy instruments and the trumpets to blow in his hand. Now, there's other stories here, but when we go to war, we have trumpets. And we blow the trumpets before we attack. It's kind of a symbol. You know, that's what God said he wanted us to do, and so we get out there, you know. And you got to have a priest. The priest is the guy that leads the battle, not the general. Oh, no, no. No, you got this wrong. First guy on the battlefield is the priest. He walks out there and he scopes this thing out. See, he's the guy that's working directly for God. Now, if this battle has been authorized by God, God will tell him, this is the battle, this is the place we want to go, and I'm here with you. And every time in Scripture when God was fighting for us, we win the battle without any doubt. Now, every time we go to battle and we don't have God working for us over here, we lose. Things just don't go right. So if you're wondering why we're at war here with the Afghans for 10 years and the Iraqis for 10 years and we can't win and we got no conclusion and we've been at war here with the Koreans, you know, for 50 years and there's no solution to it, it's because the God of heaven is not on our side. That's not to say that America is not fighting for their God. It's just that it's a different God than this guy. Different God. Different God and a different set of rules of engagement. All right, going on here, he says, they slew all the males. And they slew the kings of Midian, beside the rest of them that were slain, namely Evi, Rechem, Zur, Hur, and Reba, five kings of Midian. Balaam also, the son of Beor, they slew with the sword. And the children of Israel took all the women of Midian captives, and their little ones, and they took the spoil of all of their cattle, and of all of their flocks, and of all of their goods, and they burnt all of their cities wherein they dwelt, and all of their goodly castles with fire. And they took all of the spoil, and all of the prey, both of men and of beasts, and they brought the captives, and the prey, and the spoil to Moses. And Eleazar the priest, unto the congregation of the children of Israel, unto the camp, at the plains of Moab, which were by the Jordan River near Jericho. And Moses and Eleazar the priest and all the princes of the congregation went forth to meet them without the camp. And Moses was wroth with the officers of the host, with the captains over thousands, and the captains over hundreds, which came from the battle. And Moses said to them, Have you saved all of the women alive? Behold, these caused the children of Israel, through the counsel of Balaam, to commit trespass against the Eternal in the matter of Peor. And there was a plague among the congregation of the Eternal. So because they had not followed their instructions, there was a plague. Now, it doesn't explain here what that plague was and how bad it was and how many Israelites died, but in other instances here, for instance, David went out and did a census one time. And that was against the law. And all of the people that participated in the census were criminals. They violated the law. The government agent came up, knocked on their door, and said, I'm here to take a census, and they cooperated. Which ought to send us a message today, you know, when the government census taker comes up and knocks on the door, you ought not to cooperate. It's against the law. You probably will, but, you know, I'm just telling you. And so 70,000 Israelites died as a result of it. A plague came, disease, killed 70,000 of them as a result of it. So, you know, when we do what we're told, things work out good. And when we don't do what we're told, things work out pretty poor. Now, we're facing a great economic crisis. It's not because we don't deserve it. Hey, listen, we've been out here dealing in unjust weights and balances and credit cards and dealing in interest and usury and mortgages and stocks and bonds. And we've been breaking every economic law that God ever gave us. And, you know, as a result of that, you know, we're reaping our just rewards. That's all. You know, you break a law and there's a penalty to pay. Now, I want you to notice here that there's something coming down here. Now, listen to this. Moses then said, beheld. And Moses said to them, Have you saved all these women alive, which caused the children of Israel to violate the law of God? Now, therefore, kill every male among the little ones, and kill every woman that has known man by lying with him. Now, that required the killing of every teenager and every child, 10, 12 years old, every kid, 4, 5, and 6, every male, and every baby, 3 days old. Now, I don't think that the people of America have the stomach for carrying out that law. I don't think that you people have the stomach for carrying out these instructions against the Afghans or against the Iraqis. Which makes me ask, well, what in the hell are you people doing going to war and you're unable? You haven't got the stomach to carry out these rules of engagement. War is a nasty business. That's what our defense secretary said. He was trying to defend our guys over there. They called in an airstrike, and they killed 27 civilians. Last night on the news, they reported 27 civilians were killed in this airstrike. And Gates said, war is a nasty business. 100,000 Germans died in Dresden. Hey, war's a nasty business. 100,000 Japs died in Tokyo in the firebomb war, and war is a nasty business. It killed a bunch of men, women, and children, killed a bunch of babies, 3 days old, killed a bunch of kids, killed boys and girls, and that's the way the game is played. Now, I just wanted to point this out to you. I'm not trying to get you to write to your senator and tell him to start following the law of Moses. No, you can forget that. That isn't going to happen. But neither are you going to win the war. And that's because this God, the Creator, is not on your team. And you can't get this guy on your team unless you follow his instructions. Now, there's also a thing called an authorized war. I'm not even sure that we belong in Afghanistan or Iraq. I'm not sure that those wars are authorized. And I've got to tell you why. Let's suppose, for the sake of our argument here, that we're out at a baseball game, see, and you're up to bat. And I'm on the other team, see. I'm rooting for the other team, and you're up to bat, and you're a hell of a good hitter. And I don't like you being up to bat, and so I'm a little drunk, and I'm not really rooting for your team. So I take and I throw my beer bottle, and I hit you in the back. And then you turn around, and you can see me giving you the finger, and that I have thrown this beer bottle and hit you in the back while you were up to bat. So you turn around and start beating up on the catcher. Does that make any sense? Well, I got to ask you Americans what you people are thinking of over here, because you went to war against Afghanistan because it was the Al-Qaeda guys in Afghanistan that attacked you in New York City, you know, on 9/11. But the 20 attackers, remember these 20 Al-Qaeda guys, were all Saudi Arabians. And I got to ask the question, look, if 20 Saudi Arabians attacked you, why did you want to go to war against Afghanistan? I mean, if I'm the guy that threw the beer bottle at you, shouldn't you go to war against me? Why would you want to go beat up on the catcher? And I'm not so sure that the rest of the people in the world aren't kind of asking the same question. Americans don't seem to ask that question. And I'm just saying, you know, assuming for the sake of our discussion that 9/11 was caused by 20 Saudi Arabians. 84% of Americans now, when they're polled, will report to the poller that they do not believe the government's report on the 9/11 attacks. Well, that's pretty good. That means 84% of us over here can see that this was a black flag CIA operation to knock those Twin Towers down. 84% of, only 16% of you people out there in La La Land actually believe the government's story now. 84% of you are getting suspicious. And that's a big step in the right direction. But I just thought I'd point out that when God goes to war, he's got rules of engagement, and it doesn't include the survival of any male. No males survive. Now, let's go back to Fallujah. Let's suppose that the Marines attacking Fallujah here in Iraq, and assuming that this war is a God-ordained enterprise, the Marines surround it. They come to the city, and they say, okay, guys, why don't all you boys put down your guns and be nice, and then let's go down to Bob's bar and have a beer. Now, the other side says, hell no, we won't go, and so now we got to lay siege to the city. And we lay siege to the city, and we will take it at some point in time. There was little doubt in my mind that, you know, if we just kept after it, I think that the city of Fallujah, just like the city of Berlin, just like the city of Paris, every city that Americans laid siege to in World War II, you know, there came a time when finally we overcame it. Now we'll go into the city and we'll say, okay, well, now that you gave us some static over here, here's what we're going to do. And we would have gone into Fallujah and we'd have taken every male in the city and killed them. There would be no male survivors out of the city. And then we would have taken every boy from the age of down and we would have killed all of them. And then we might even have taken the females in the city. Not that we had to, but we might have taken them out. All that had laid with men killed them. Hey, listen, war is a bloody business. I just thought I'd report it to you. All right, Deuteronomy 28, verses 15 through 68. Now, here's what happens to us when we don't obey God and keep His commandments. When God comes up and He says, now listen, here's the way I want you to do this, and you don't do it, then he gets a little uppity, and He comes back and He says, it'll come to pass, if you will not hearken unto the voice of the Eternal your God to observe to do all of His commandments and His statutes which I command you this day, that all of these curses shall come upon you and overtake you, and cursed shall you be in the city, and cursed shall you be in the field, and cursed shall be your basket and store. And cursed shall be the fruit of your body and the fruit of your land. Now, I want to point out to you that cursed shall be the fruit of your body. 5% of Americans born have birth defects. Cursed shall you be in the city. Have you taken a look at cities like Detroit, Philadelphia? Hey, listen, these cities are in decline. Detroit, 139 square miles, 40% of it has now been bulldozed. It's open fields. 35,000 acres of the city of Detroit is now farmland. Got that? You people peaked in 1960. You're in a decline there. We've got dozens of those kinds of city. Cursed shall you be in the city, and cursed shall you be in the field. Got a drought out in the west now. Now, did you notice? Have you been paying attention here to the agricultural production of the United States? We used to be a net exporter. We're now a net importer of agricultural goods. 50% of everything you eat in the supermarket and take home comes from outside our borders. We've been cursed here in our fields. Cursed in the fruit of our body and the fruit of our land and the increase of our kine and the flocks of our sheep. Our dairy herds are being slaughtered and decimated. Cursed shall you be when you come in, and cursed shall you be when you go out. Take a look at our economic dilemma right now. We are cursed when we come in and cursed when we go out. And we're being raped, robbed, and pillaged by Bank of America and Citicorp and Goldman Sachs, and we don't know what the hell to do next. The Eternal will send upon you cursing, vexation, and rebuke in all that you set your hand unto for to do until you be destroyed. Now, we haven't been totally destroyed yet, but that's coming. That's coming. And why is that? Well, because we can't do what we're told. We can't follow instructions when we go to war. We can't follow instructions when it comes to our national holidays. We can't follow instructions when it comes to the Sabbath. Well, okay. You know, you and I have a choice to make. And we haven't been making the best of choices. So I just thought I would point this out to you over here. These wars that you're conducting over here are going to come to a no good end because you're not following the rules of engagement set down by our Creator. You're not going to revitalize Detroit and Philadelphia, Los Angeles, New York. You got a million people in the last 10 years that have left New York City. Did you know that? The population of New York is declining since 9/11. Why is that? It's declining. We're cursed in our cities. You got white flight. Why is that? Now go out here to your suburbs over here. Well, hell, you're being foreclosed on and thrown out of your houses in the suburbs, America. What does that tell you? And you're being raped here, you know, by Henry Paulson and Tim Geithner and Barack Obama and the councils of Congress, you know, those Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi. And I mean, the politicians, it isn't just the Democrats. I ain't picking on anybody. The Republicans were raping you, robbing you, and pillaging you from 2000 to 2008. Now the Democrats are raping, robbing, and pillaging you in 2009 and 10. Then you're not going to get any relief. That's the tragic part. We're not going to get any relief. Well, not until we start practicing the law again. So that's why here at the law school, you know, we like to tell our students, you know, hey, wait a minute, boys and girls, you and I are the proximate cause of our own injury. And as soon as we quit violating these laws, you know, we're gonna have a lot better results. Let me give you a quick illustration here. We have a national health care debate going on in this country. And 44 million Americans don't have health insurance. And I want to point out that George Gordon does not have health insurance. It isn't because I couldn't afford it. If I wanted it, I'd go buy it. I don't want health insurance. I don't get sick. I don't wear glasses. I don't have a hearing aid. I'm 70. I'm in good health. And I don't need any of those, and I don't want them. Now, Americans want health insurance because they're sick, or they expect to get sick. You expect that you're going to get sick. That's why you want health insurance. Wouldn't you be better off if you had good health and you expected to stay healthy? Let's put the shoe on the other foot. What if you said, well, I don't need health insurance because I'm not going to get sick? You see, you can't say that because you eat pig, fat, blood, sugar, and white flour. And because of that, you have bad health. And I would concur. If you're going to eat pig, fat, blood, sugar, and white flour, you need health insurance. Hell, I wouldn't deny it. If you're going to eat at McDonald's, I think you need health insurance. It's just that I don't want to buy it for you. That's what my objection is. I don't care if you buy health insurance or not, but I don't want to buy it for you, and I don't want any for myself. I don't eat at McDonald's. I don't drink Coca-Cola. Now, boys and girls, we have an epidemic of sickness and disease here in the United States. And one of them is this insulin disease called diabetes. And in the last 20 years, we Americans have doubled the incidence of diabetes, and it just is coincidental. I don't say it's cause and effect, just coincidental, that the consumption of soda pop has also doubled in the last 20 years. Well, law. Duh. Can we put two and two together? I think that if we could double the consumption of soda pop over the next 20 years, that we could double the incidence of diabetes over the next 20 years. Hell, if we put our minds to it, I think everybody in America can give himself diabetes and be on insulin. If that's what you want, get after it. I don't want to get in your way. I don't want it, and I'm not going to participate in it. It's just a cause and effect decision that you make. You know, it's a choice that you have to make, and you've made your decision. Now, as they say down at the Blue Room, you dealt the cards, play your hand. America has dealt its cards. No, play your hand. But I don't think you're going to win the pot. So here at the law school, I said, well, let's sit down and let's put a story together and let's tell these people what this war story is all about. You're going to come to a no good end in Afghanistan just like you came to a poor end in Iraq. And it isn't going to pay off for you. It's going to pay off handsomely for Goldman Sachs. It's going to pay off handsomely for Bank of America and Boeing Aircraft and Lockheed and the defense contractors, Halliburton, KBR. But it's not going to pay off for you and me. That's the bottom line. All right, there's the war story. So let me conclude by reminding you that you have been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.